Each day, hundreds of thousands of Sierra Leoneans go searching for diamonds. They are artisanal miners, men, women, and even children, working in unregulated pits, spending their hours doing back-breaking work, digging, clearing, sifting, and washing tons of dirt. Most of the time, they don't find anything. If they're lucky, they might come across a tiny twinkling fragment of diamond that will earn them the income they need to keep going. But the dream, the hope that keeps so many people going, is the possibility that you might just find a real gemstone, a big whole diamond, worth the kind of money that can change your life forever. In 2017, that dream came true for Komba John Ball and Andrew Safia.
A lucky pastor finds a huge diamond in Sierra Leone, one of the 20 largest diamonds ever found.
The man who found it, or whose diggers did, is a Christian pastor, Emmanuel Momo. The diamond was from a sleepy village called Koyadu in the eastern Kano district, according to the
church. It was the ultimate good news story. In a country often defined by blood diamonds, the newly named Peace Diamond was to change the narrative forever.
This diamond, it comes from a country better known for its blood diamonds.
I think the true value of this diamond is the symbolism and the meaning behind it.
But behind all the hype and excitement, there were the five diggers, the ones whose back-breaking work had uncovered the stone, often standing just out of shot of the media frenzy. Komba and Safia were the two youngest diggers. What happened to them when their dream of a diamond came true? Hi, I'm Kim Chakaneta, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. This episode will be the final one of this season, so a big shout out to all our regular and new listeners for your reviews and thoughts and suggestions. And while you're waiting for a new season, remember that there is a huge Comb archive with more than 80 episodes for you to dive into. Stories from Egypt to Zimbabwe. Online, we are hashtag The Comb, and our email address is thecomb@bbc.com.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
Well, my family, we beaucoup small. Mama born when we 10.
Our family is quite large. My mother gave birth to 10 of us. 4 passed away. 6 of us are still alive. 4 boys and 2 girls.
This is Komba John Ball. He's speaking to me over the phone from Freetown with the help of a translator. He's recalling his childhood over 300 kilometres from here in a tiny village close to Koyadu. It's an area that's often been shaped by the geological fluke that left it rich with diamond deposits. Diamonds were one of the driving forces behind the civil war of the 1990s, providing an incentive for violence and a source of funding for rebel groups fighting to maintain control of those resources. The civil war ended when Komba was 8, but it had a lasting impact on his family's fortunes.
Well, life not be easy anyway. Like for me, we make an able land books just because of...
Life was not easy. My parents separated due to the war. My mother returned to the village. She struggled and started working for people on their farms.
As a young child in primary school, Komba could see that his mother was suffering with the effort of trying to support so many children on her own. He wanted to help.
I said, why do you see the struggle for now?
I told her that I wanted to help her with palm nut farming. I can vividly remember how she beat me on that day, warning me not to ever say publicly that I wanted to leave school.
But circumstances left Komba with little choice. He was still in primary school when he had to drop out and start working. It was physical work, and all the harder with him being young and small, climbing trees, cutting the palm nuts, processing and extracting oil from them. But Komba was driven to keep going by his one great desire.
All I wanted was to make my mother happy. Me and my mother were very close. I was the only one with her in the village. My older siblings were in Freetown schooling. When I was attending school, my mother used to call me doctor. But when my education stalled and I was working and getting some money, I felt happy and my mom was happy too.
But there were complicated emotions around Komba's achievements.
I remember one day after I had processed palm oil for her. She was crying. She told me about the time during the Civil War when they were fleeing the onslaught. She saw mothers throwing their young children into a river. She said she held me, and she thought about throwing me away as well because she was carrying me in her arms with my younger sibling on her back, and she was struggling.
Kumba's mother had fought to keep going, even with such a heavy burden. And now, years later, he was determined to give back to her. He remembers his pride after he'd processed a whole drumload of palm oil.
Like 2012, now myself do me big farm work I ever do in my life. About one drum.
After that remarkable palm oil processing I'd done for her, she said it was a good thing that she had not given up on me and thrown me in the river. Otherwise, there would have been nobody to give her that much palm oil. She thanked me and prayed for me by spitting on my palm to bless me. I cried. Even now, just remembering it, I feel emotional.
But in 2015, everything changed. Komba's mother died. After working so hard to make her happy, Komba found himself alone. This was when his friendship with Andrew Safia, the second digger, became a crucial partnership. Safia had similar struggles to Komba. He had also lost his father during the rebel war, and his single mother struggled to manage his school fees. Safia had been top of his class, but with the Ebola crisis adding to the family's financial hardships, he finally had to drop out, just before his high school leaving exams. It was a devastating blow.
One, would you make a shame? Because when I've been there,
I was one of the top 5 students in my class. So dropping out of school was a shame for me and my family. From primary school up to when I entered junior secondary school, I wanted to achieve 2 things in life, and I promised my mother that. So I wanted to become a lawyer or a journalist.
Those dreams were far out of reach. Safia was just 15 when he started digging. It was tough work, but the thing that sticks in his memory most isn't the physical toll of digging all day, but the feeling of inferiority from those around.
You know, not the community, I just been ceasing normal.
Life was miserable for me in the community. I was facing many challenges. You know the way it is when you are poor and your mother is poor. Those who could afford it sent their children to school and saw us as being unserious. They were of no help and only cared for their own children. So they saw us as non-entities.
Safia is a planner. He's one of those people who never be content just to sit with whatever situation he finds himself in. He's always got his eyes on the future, figuring out ways to get himself somewhere better. So Safia and Komba, united by common hardship and a shared determination to shape their own futures, joined forces. Earning enough money to get by would be challenge enough, but they were absolutely determined that one way or another, they would find their way back into education. For that, they needed enough, not just to live, but to save. They came up with a daily schedule to bring in as much money as possible through 2 different jobs.
So, in the morning now, me and John.
So, John Bull and I agreed to start working. We would first go to the Palm Nut farm around 5 a.m., return home and prepare some boiled bananas for breakfast before going to the mine.
For their afternoons, they were accepted into a mining group that was funded by a local pastor, Emmanuel Momo. Around 300,000 Sierra Leoneans are thought to work in these kinds of groups. Your sponsor supports your work in return for having rights to whatever is found. Here's how Pastor Momo describes the business relationship as the sponsor of Komba and Safia's group of 5.
You are the one who provides the finance, buy all the materials, equipment that they are using in the mining field.
Of course, the equipment in this case is limited to the basics. Pickaxes, shovels, sieves.
Absolutely depends on you for their undertakings. Like when it comes into medical aspects, you are in charge. And if the family has a problem, they are going to run to you for you to support, to give your adequate support to that family. So they only and solely depends on you for their survivals.
Does that then mean that they are getting some sort of like stipend or salary? Because obviously it might be a very long time before you discover anything. So what tends to be the arrangement?
No, that like, we are not giving them stipend, neither salary, but we are feeding them to take care of themselves and their family. So that is why there is a condition in the mining field. Whenever you found the diamond, you, the supporters, as the lion shared, and the diggers have their own shares according to the initial arrangement that he does even before starting the mining.
So the mining provided them with basic necessities, meaning they could save more of what they made from farming. Safi was sure that if they could keep up the grueling schedule of two jobs for just a year, he'd have enough saved to go back to school and finally graduate. It was a solid plan in theory, but the reality was crushing.
The very first day...
On the first day at that mine, everything about me went backward. My dream was to become a lawyer, and here I was instead inside a mining pit. After an hour of work, I said to Jumbo that my dream had been shattered. Only I can understand the way I felt on that day.
Safia, if you were to describe the type of work you were doing, where did you spend most of the day? What were you doing?
The mining.
We would apportion a plot to each person to mine. We evenly divided the task by measuring two shovel lengths in width and depth of three shovels. Each would clear the surface and dig the pit. There was no consideration for age. We did that every day.
Kombe remembers the importance of the friendship between all the diggers to keep going in harsh conditions.
The pit is very deep. If it rains, we get rain beaten. Or if it's sunny, we're exposed to the scorching heat. When we worked, we talked to each other. We gave ourselves words of courage to motivate us. We also cracked jokes. We had a Bluetooth device, and we would even play music.
It was hard work and with unreliable returns. But for Kombe and Safia, it was worth persevering because of the tantalizing hope. Find a diamond, and all of this would feel irrelevant. So while keeping their spirits up with jokes and singing, the men would also spend those hours of labor dreaming about what they would do if they suddenly became rich.
I thought about it a lot. I hoped I would one day go to the capital city of Freetown and own a house there. I always dreamed of having a house that was two stories high. And there was a particular type of car I always dreamed of, Toyota FJ Cruiser. I still think of it. Even if it goes out of fashion, I want to own it someday.
Okay, nice. Any particular color?
Yellow and black, or blue and black. I love those two color combinations.
So tell me about the day you found your diamond. What do you remember about that morning?
We'd all been clean. Anyway, I'm not be expecting...
At sunrise on that day, we did not expect to find a diamond. After all, we are only going to extract gravel and not to wash it for diamonds. So nobody expected we would make such a big find.
There's a saying that good things always happen when you least expect it. It was a Friday and Kombe and Safia had their boiled banana breakfast as usual. They prayed and then they went to the pit. Safia says usually diggers don't work on a Friday, but their group was behind, so they decided to miss their day off in order to try and catch up. For all the hours of work mining a piece of land, only some of it is actually spent actively looking for diamonds. That Friday, the plan was to work on preparations, breaking ground, extracting gravel, and the start of the rainy season was bringing extra challenges.
When we arrived at the site, the pit was flooded, so we first had to remove the water from the pit. While we were getting rid of the water, my uncle was busy breaking the earth.
Then, that moment, the second where life changed forever. For Kombe, it came as a sparkle catching his eye. For Safia, it was a shout from his friend. Here's how Kombe remembers it.
So the quick water they calmed down.
I saw this stone under the running water. It was being dragged down by the water. I had never seen a diamond before. My uncle was still breaking the earth while I stood for more than a minute, just staring at the stone. Then I said to my uncle, "Uncle, The stone is sparkling. What sort of stone is it?
Kombe reached down and plucked it from the water.
No, I wouldn't say the stone had been cold.
It felt very cold because it was lying under moving water from under the earth. As soon as I took it, they grabbed it from me, saying, "This is a diamond."
Diggers must imagine this moment so often. How would you react if luck finally found you? Of course, the reality was more complicated. The stone was shiny, but it was rough. The older diggers thought it was a diamond, but they couldn't be sure. Doubts were everywhere. Was it really a diamond? How could they protect it from being stolen? Would the pastor give them their share, or would he take the wealth for himself? They tried to stop themselves getting carried away, agreeing to keep it a secret and take the diamond to Pastor Momo. But already the diggers were dreaming.
The happiness was palpable. Everybody started talking about what they planned to do with the money. We had seen people before doing many things with proceeds from their diamonds, which were far smaller in size. So our expectations were very high.
And once you'd found this stone and you were excited and making all these plans, who did you tell about the discovery? Who was the first person you told?
I went to the village and told my mother to pray for us, saying that God had destined richness for us. So I told her to pray for us so we would benefit from the discovery and that my dream of becoming a lawyer would soon be achieved. I advised her not to tell anybody else about the diamond. She agreed and started praying.
What was your mother's reaction when you told her the news?
At that very moment, my mama cried for us.
My mother cried. She talked about how she had initially refused to allow me to mine, but I consoled her and said it was all destiny.
Having handed their precious discovery over, the diggers were filled with anxiety. Plans to keep it secret were quickly breached, and with everyone suddenly aware and excited, they were overwhelmed with fear that the stone might be stolen. Safia, the ultimate planner, was already making his plans for education. With a find like this, he was thinking beyond just returning to his local school, and he wanted Kombe to come with him.
I don't say if I go to Canada one.
I believed that if I went to Canada, I would be able to achieve the kind of education that I desired. I thought with a certificate from Canada, I would be able to get employment anywhere in the world. So that is always my dream.
What happened next was well covered when the news broke in 2017.
Meanwhile, one of the biggest diamonds ever found in the world goes up for auction.
The diggers alerted their sponsor, Pastor Momo, as per their agreement with him. He took the stone to be evaluated. And finally, Kombe and Safia could truly believe that the impossible was really happening. In the face of overwhelming pressure and numerous lucrative bribery attempts to try get him to sell the diamond on the black market, Pastor Momo decided to hand it over to the government. He hoped that the profits could be used to help the local community. The stone was dubbed the Peace Diamond and became a historic symbol of hope, making headlines all over the world. It was agreed that the diggers would each get a share, and in addition, profits would also go to the government for projects in the village. It took time, but finally the money arrived. A main payment of $80,000 for each of the diggers. From working two jobs just to try and scrape together their school fees, this was more money than Safia and Kombe could have ever hoped for when they first teamed up. Now, Safia, you had left the village that you were brought up in, you know, because of shame, because you couldn't afford to go to school, but now you'd come into some money. How did that change the way that you thought about yourself?
What was going through my mind was destiny. I thought to myself that no one should look low upon anyone else, regardless of their circumstances. In my village, there were those who looked low upon us because even to feed was a problem for us. You have to bear in mind that when you have money, or rather, when you are poor, that's when you know those who truly love you. And when you become rich, that's also when you know the real intentions of some people. Some wish for you to lose it all.
The seriousness of the money and what it could represent weighed heavily. Komba has spent years dreaming of what he might do if he was rich. A nice house, a trip abroad, his favorite car. But when the money arrived, he didn't go out and splash it immediately.
When I got my share of the money, I kept it for a whole week without touching it. Eventually, I traveled to Freetown to buy a house. I did not mind using up all the money to own a house here. That was going to satisfy me.
How did having the money change the way that you thought about yourself?
Having the money made me feel very happy about myself. But regrettably, my mother was not alive to witness it. That's what I first thought about. But I was very happy. After everything, when I got my own share, my life changed completely.
And it's not just how Komba thinks of himself. Other people see him differently now as well. He remembers how, when his mother died, he felt like he had nobody to turn to for help. But now...
When I got the money, people became more respectful of me. Whenever I visit the village, the people gravitate towards me with a profound sense of respect for me, like a chief. Some say, "Look at you, Komba. See how different you look now." Others say, "You have grown big and have put on weight." Even now, when I occasionally visit Kono, people wait to catch a glimpse of me, saying, "Our child is coming." Those who saw me when I was a kid struggling, now they see me in a different light.
Komba and Safia both felt this effect. A dramatic change in how they were perceived and treated by their neighbors and even strangers. They felt the weight of their luck and were determined to spend their money wisely. Safia still had his eyes firmly fixed on Canada, and John Bull was eager to join the scheme.
So we decided to go there and get an education and change our lives.
This is when things started to unravel.
Yeah, because when they don't see that...
So a man came saying he could be of help to make it to Canada. He asked us for $15,000, which he said was for accommodation and the university fees. He said he needed to sort that out before applying for our visas. So he took us to Ghana for about 6 months. Everything we did in Ghana was taken from our diamond money.
While they waited in Ghana for their paperwork to be processed, Komba says they spent their money without much thought, enjoying the luxury of being able to buy whatever they wanted, to eat out all the time, and not worry about the price tag. Quickly, the money started to disappear. But the promised paperwork for Canada never came through. Eventually, they had to confront a painful reality. Even with all their new wealth, they couldn't simply buy their way into a new life in Canada. The Canadian authorities just saw them as young Sierra Leoneans who had never travelled before, with no contacts and country waiting to receive them. They said they didn't believe they'd go home after their studies ended. So their visa applications were rejected.
And when the visas were turned down, you know, despite you having the means, the financial money, you know, the money to be able to do this trip, how did you feel?
Well, me, I've not been feel fine anyway, because...
I did not feel good at all. Everybody had heard that we are going out of the country. Both our friends and foes all knew, and they believed that we had gone to Canada. So when the rejection came, we felt very sad and disappointed. I even cried on that day.
Komba had always liked his home, but it felt different returning there, having had to give up on his dream of education in Canada.
It had been really good for me. Never mind, I have been born.
It was very devastating for me. Even though I was returning home, even going to the village then was very hard for me because they had all heard that I had left the country. Seeing me back when I didn't come back voluntarily was too much to take in.
With the Canada plan in ruins, Safia and Komba split up for the first time since they started working together. Komba went home to look for new opportunities in Sierra Leone. But Safia wasn't willing to give up on his plan of getting an education abroad. A new plan emerged. This time for a life in another country, outside of Africa.
So now I left for Sudan back. Now I left for Sudan. Now one lady.
So a neighbor of mine told me that her uncle had lived there for a long time and that he had a good job and had been taking people there from Freetown. He told me that the company he was working for needed a driver and that I would be employed. They had also told us in Ghana about good educational standards and that it was cheap. So I said to myself that while serving the company, I would be attending classes. But when I arrived here, it turned out that it was all a lie and that he was a cleaner. And I had paid him $2,500 in order to get here in the first place.
When Safi reached his destination, he found the reality was very different to what he had been promised.
Then when are they work part-time job now they do?
I can only find part-time work here. It's been 2 months now without pay. And the place where they had offered to regularize my immigration status, that has not materialized. So I'm here in limbo.
Without residency, Safia is left in a vulnerable situation. For this interview, we're speaking via WhatsApp call, fitting in between his long hours working. His situation is a world away from what he imagined for himself.
Even with her, are they sleep?
I look after horses in a stable, which is also where I sleep and eat. Other workers were given accommodation, while I am left to sleep in the stable.
After all his dreams of going overseas, Safia's greatest wish now is just to go home.
Because one, I think say I get freedom there.
I have freedom in Sierra Leone. Right now, where I am, I don't have freedom.
Back in Sierra Leone, Komba is living in Freetown, pursuing a new business, making aluminium window frames. His life is better than it was before, but thinking of the Peace Diamond leaves him with a bitter taste.
I have no more money left, apart from the work I'm doing now and the house I bought. The cash itself is finished. As things stand now, yes, I do have regrets. When I had the money, I was too young. Looking back, I don't feel good about it. I was just showing off and buying clothes and all that. You know the way it is with young people. If that travel to Ghana had borne fruits, fine. But we spent more than $10,000 just on food and drinks there. All that was a complete waste. If only we had used up that amount here, it would have been a worthy investment. I could have even bought a much better house here than I did. If only I did not have that ambition of traveling abroad, in the hope that I would make more money there, I would have done a lot here with the money instead of wasting it.
What stings the most for Safia is a feeling that the diggers never got the appreciation they were due for finding the stone in the first place. While the Peace Diamond became huge news in Sierra Leone and beyond, most media reported the story as if the pastor who sponsored the group had found the stone himself in the ground. The actual diggers, including Kombo, who had actually first set eyes on it, were barely mentioned. With all the travel, meetings with important politicians and business figures and press interviews, Safia felt sidelined, excluded.
Well, when we do the press conference back when...
Even when we went to State House, the office of the president, can you imagine that we were never allowed to see the president? Even when they held the press conference about the selling of the diamond, I put my hand up repeatedly, but I was not allowed to talk. And the journalists were not interested in us, the diggers. It was bugging us, but we did not have the connections. If I were to find that diamond right now, I would break it into bits and every year I would sell one bit. But I know that time will never come again. All my prayer now is for God to enable me to return to my country safe and sound. That's all.
Right now, Nami one great no.
No one else can really understand the way I feel inside after believing that I had achieved my dream. Since the collapse of the Canada dream, I lost all courage. But my friend Jambul has been consoling me to remain steadfast and hopeful. It drives me mad.
Despite the disappointment that haunts both Komba and Safia, there have been positives from striking gold. They both spent some of their money on houses and property, which are valuable assets, despite their lack of cash. And they say they've learned from their experiences and understand now about how to manage money.
Yeah, now it's better because...
Before I got the money, life was very hard for me. Now it's not easy, but it's better than before. I now live in the city, and I have my shop where I can make some money. In the village, I never held 1 million leones on my own, so I cannot compare now to the days in the village, to be honest.
You described to me when you were talking about growing up that, you know, life was quite hard as a child. And I wonder, do you think the lives of your children are going to be different? What are your hopes for them?
their own life will be different from my own. Before one,
their lives will be different. I was born and raised in the village. There in the city, I attend in good schools. My parents had no house when I was born. My children are growing up in their father's house in Freetown. That's a big deal. So my children won't suffer the way I did.
Safia, true to form, is making plans.
My friend Komba Jombul has learned a trade. We are brothers now. I can learn the same trade. So I believe that within 3 months, I will catch up. I can learn skills and get a skilled job and still succeed in life. I believe what my friend has done, staying back home and setting up his skilled business, is a good thing. Whatever God does, he does for a reason. I believe that the experience is something for our children, both alive and unborn. It is history for them as well.
Picking them back, unborn picking them, now history to them back.
This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart and me, Kim Chakaneta. The sound design was done by Mary Goodhart and Marco Oriunto. Piers Lynch is our editor. Our studio manager is Stuart Hollingdrake. Thanks for listening.